Welcome to Insight, live at noon with a rebroadcast at 7 p.m. You've probably seen ads for Proposition 1, which promises solutions to the state's mental health and homelessness crisis, but it is complicated and far from leisure reading. Ahead on Insight, we'll have a breakdown of Prop 1 ahead of the primary. Also, on March 5th, Sacramento voters will choose a new mayor. We're continuing our conversations with the leading mayoral candidates and welcome current state lawmaker Kevin McCarty. Finally, a Sacramento Girl Scout troop received an out-of-this-world experience just about an hour ago. They made contact with an astronaut aboard the International Space Station using a ham radio they built themselves. The troop joins us about their partnership with NASA. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. That's all coming up today on Insight. First, here's the news. From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. In recent years, California has spent an unprecedented amount to curb homelessness, yet the number of unsheltered people in the state has continued to grow to 170,000 people on any given night. The root causes are a wicked combination of mental health, substance abuse, sky-high rents, as well as a severe shortage of affordable housing, which can make tangible, effective solutions feel out of reach. But on March 5th, California voters will decide whether or not to allow the state to borrow billions of dollars, roughly 6.4, through a bond to overhaul the state's mental health system. It's called Proposition 1, and you have probably seen the ads for it. Governor Newsom calls it the last big piece to finding a real solution, but sides are split on whether it will be effective. Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg, as well as Sacramento County Sheriff Jim Cooper, are supporters of Prop 1, but there is also opposition, and that includes the ACLU, as well as a number of mental health organizations. It is a big, complicated issue. CAP Radio healthcare reporter Kate Wolf joins us to break it down for us. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hi, Vicki.
Okay, so Prop 1, if you open up your voter guide, it is far from leisure reading. The analysis, the policy language, I mean, it is a beast. Lives are very busy. Big picture, what are voters deciding on?
Voters are deciding on whether or not to the state should borrow money to build capacity for more affordable housing and more treatment capacity for people with mental health or substance use treatment. And they're voting on whether or not to change how a particular tax on high earners is spent. That's called the Mental Health Services Act. It was passed in 2004, and it currently goes to counties to use for how they think mental health services should be best used in the county. So what it would do is it would change it so that they have to follow stricter guidelines that are imposed by the state.
Okay, so one piece is asking to borrow more money. The second piece is kind of shuffling around how existing funding is being spent when it comes to mental health services. How does this relate to homelessness and the growing number of people that are experiencing homelessness in California?
So this is, you know, a mental health bill, but it's really meant to target the situation on the streets with the amount of people who are clearly suffering while being homeless. So treatment, not tents, is the tagline that the governor has been using. He's also been really advocating about how this could help homeless veterans who might be suffering from PTSD. And essentially, it's not really going to be for the average person thinking about, oh, how does mental health care get distributed in the county? It's really about targeting this population of people specifically.
Given that Governor Newsom has, and as well as the state legislature, have devoted unprecedented spending and resources to curbing homelessness, to provide different resources, more stability for mental health and substance use. I mean, we're talking billions of dollars in recent years. So if someone's listening to this, they may wonder, why is Proposition the last big piece? That is what Governor Newsom calls it. What does he mean by that?
Right. So Governor Newsom calls this the last big piece of the puzzle, right? The piece that's going to make the picture all clear. And he thinks that the other piece pieces have already been laid. There are things like conservatorship reform, care court, things that make it easier to compel people into treatment. He says the flexibility has been provided. The dollars, you know, are now flexible to how we spend them. And so now we need more beds, right? So this, in Governor Newsom's eyes, is more places for people who are suffering from mental health and substance use disorder, more places for them to go.
When it comes down to the money, the $6.38 billion bond that voters will decide on, what do proponents like Governor Newsom or Mayor Daryl Steinberg, others, expecting that this money, what will it actually achieve in terms of housing and mental health services?
Right. And I think when we say bond, people's eyes glaze over a little bit. And just to make it clear, so this would be the state borrowing money that it will then have to pay back over the next 30 years. So every year the state will have to pay back $130 million. So for the next three decades. So what they hope it'll achieve is essentially 11,000 more places for people to go. So 4,500 new units of permanent supportive housing, and 6,800 beds for mental illness and substance use treatment.
That seems like a drop in the bucket.
Right. Well, we do have 171,000 people experiencing homelessness in California on a daily basis. So this is really meant to target a certain population of people who are extremely ill.
Just this week, the Legislative Analyst's Office, we had this conversation yesterday, estimated that California is facing an even larger budget deficit, $73 billion. So where does Prop 1 fit into this fiscal picture and outlook? Is Prop 1 financially sustainable?
It's a good question. I think that's that latest news from the LAO. So there hasn't really been too much talk about the financial stability of it. But I think Newsom's main point is that it's going to come out of taxpayers' pocket. It's already coming out of taxpayers' pockets in ways like through emergency rooms, through jails, right? We're thinking in Sacramento County of building this annex to our jail because we have so many people who need mental health treatment here. And that's $1 billion annex that we're talking about building. So I think, you know, we disinvested in institutions in the 60s and 70s, right? We closed down a lot of institutions that were helping people with mental illness, and in many cases, warehousing people with mental illness, which is why they got shut down. But there wasn't a commensurate investment in mental health care. And so mental health practitioners and people involved in this space have said mental health has been underfunded for a really long time. And now's the time to say we don't want this money to be going through jails and prisons and going through the, you know, emergency rooms. We want to be targeted spending it on mental health care and substance use treatment beds for people.
So because of that disinvestment, I mean, taxpayers, Californians, I mean, we are already paying the human cost of what we're already experiencing in the state, but, you know, through other sectors.
Exactly. That's definitely the governor's point.
Mm. In your reporting also, I mean, the Sacramento newsletter just came out. You had a great write-up really explaining in a digestible way what Proposition 1 is. And one of the lines that you wrote was that California is facing a housing crisis rather than just a mental health crisis. Expand upon that.
That really came from my conversation with the Behavioral Health Services Director of Sacramento County. His name is Ryan Quist, and he left me with a really powerful idea of this. And here's his quote.
I think that we continue to make erroneous conclusions around the connection between mental health and our homeless situation. In our last point in time count, we had 9,000 folks that were unhoused. If we had 9,000 units sitting there unused, then we would have a mental health crisis. We don't have 9,000 units sitting there unused. We have a housing crisis.
So Quist says that when he and his, you know, other folks, outreach workers, go and talk to people who are living unhoused, they say the first thing that they want is housing. They are not looking for mental health services just yet, right? They want housing first. And I think that housing first idea is what defines a lot of conversation about how we should be getting people treatment, how we should be helping people, right? You can't think about your treatment plan if you're thinking about where am I going to sleep tonight, if you're thinking about how am I going to get food, how am I going to get my paycheck, et cetera. So I really think that when we think about this measure, Prop 1, it's not going to solve our homelessness issue. It's going to try and get the funds more specifically to the people who are most at need, like who could be living with friends or family if they had their situation under control. But it's not going to solve the homelessness issue.
Your article also mentions a UC San Francisco study that was, you know, was long overdue. It was a comprehensive study that really interviewed and looked at the percentage of people that are experiencing homelessness across California. I think the last study of its kind was done in like the 1990s, so it's been decades. What that study showed was that, you know, a lot of people who are experiencing homelessness, they do have a history of mental health conditions. They also have a history of substance use. So what does Prop 1 hope to achieve in addressing this combo?
That UCSF study, I think anyone who's, you know, interested in this issue should totally look it up, check it out. It has so much information about it's 3,200 people that they surveyed, asking them, how did you end up in this situation? Tell us more about your experience and your experience with substance use and mental health. And found that, 82% of people surveyed had experienced a serious mental health condition at some point in their lives. So this and of course, being homeless can exacerbate that, and being homeless can exacerbate this, substance use and introduce people to substance use and not help people get away from substance use. So Prop 1 is really trying to address the Venn diagram of people who are experiencing homelessness and serious mental health issues, and is really trying to get those folks help especially if they won't volunteer for services.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with CAP Radio healthcare reporter Kate Wolf about Proposition 1, which is on your March 5th ballot. The LAO, the Legislative Analyst Office, that's a nonpartisan body within the state legislature. They also noted a shortage already that exists for places when it comes to needing mental health care, needing drug and alcohol treatment. Where does Prop 1 fit into this? How could Prop 1 help?
Yeah, well, I've done some research on or some reporting on ambulance patient offload times in Sacramento County. We know they're super, super high. I went to a summit the other week, and part of the reason that they're so high is there's a lot of people in the emergency room that need behavioral health care that can't get it. So they cannot be, the emergency room can't bring people to treatment beds because they don't exist, right? So it's causing, and a lot of people who have been found incompetent to stand trial in jails are not getting the care that they need to be returned to competency because there aren't enough spots. So Prop 1 is essentially just trying to build up the capacity of mental health treatment and substance use treatment so that people can, especially the confluence of the two, so that, people are not languishing in emergency rooms and languishing in jails and prisons.
When it comes to funding and even just like vacancy within the county, what did you learn from Ryan Quist, who you mentioned is the behavioral health director for Sac County?
Exactly. Quist says a lot of this money is now, would if Prop 1 were to pass, would be used by the county to help people with rent subsidies and not to build new housing. And so he says it's really hard when we have the vacancy rate that we have in Sacramento County.
We have a vacancy rate of about, it's like less than 1%. We have staff that are having a hard time finding housing. And so to imagine finding affordable housing for individuals who don't even make as much as our staff make, that is a difficult prospect.
So it seems like that money that will go to the county may not go very far.
You also spoke with family members who have loved ones that suffer from mental health conditions, and they are supporters of Proposition 1. One of them is Elizabeth Hopper. Tell us about her.
Elizabeth Hopper's daughter is 34, and for the past 15 years, she's been really struggling to live a stable life. She has schizoaffective disorder, PTSD, a number of other mental health issues, and she has cycled in and out of all sorts of treatment plans. And Elizabeth Hopper, she says she wishes her daughter did get jailed and is now in a mental health diversion program. But she says there's an environment where people say, oh, it's good that your daughter got jailed because now she can get treatment, because it's so hard to find treatment, especially for people like her daughter who do not volunteer for services. Hopper says even though her daughter is really struggling, she will very often not volunteer. And so she is not eligible for services that are all only volunteer based. And so something that Hopper likes about Prop 1 is that it opens the door for some funding to go to involuntary treatment, which she says we need to change our attitude about involuntary treatment. Here's what she told me.
This is not about locking people up for good. It's about if you're ill enough where your brain doesn't think it's sick anymore, and yet you're in a completely different reality and your life is negatively impacting the spaces of other people, and there's an illness at the base of it, let's get the illness treated. That's the compassionate humanitarian thing to do.
Hopper thinks we've learned our lesson about institutionalization, warehousing people for decades. We learned that back in the 60s and 70s. She says now what we need is for there to be a level of care that is very intense, sure, a locked facility, and appropriate step-down care so that once you leave that place, it's like rehab. You can get, you can start to get better over time.
In the last minute or so we have, I mean, we've heard from people who support Prop 1. Who's against Prop 1?
Groups against Prop 1 are people who are against involuntary treatment, groups like Disability Rights California, ACLU, and also the counties. The district, the California State Association of Counties are against Prop 1 because they say the counties are using the money effectively. They need flexibility. You know, they should be able to keep it.
Because essentially that money would go from the counties to the state, correct?
A portion of it would go to the state, but it would definitely be under much more state control than county control.
When it comes to the civil liberty aspect, what is the argument that's being made against Prop 1?
When it comes to civil liberties, the argument being made against Prop 1 is that when you have more money that's eligible to go to involuntary treatment, that treatment is less effective than voluntary treatment. And it can, in fact, result in worse outcomes for people if they are involuntarily treated instead of finally realizing I need to get treatment by themselves. But people like Hopper say, for some people, that will never happen.
Yeah. And that was her loved one. Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you, Vicky.
That is CAP Radio healthcare reporter Kate Wolf talking and helping us better understand Prop 1, which you will decide on. Registered voters will decide on the March 5th primary ballot. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Schlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg is closing in on his final term in the city, and the four leading candidates are quickly approaching the primary to see who will move forward. If one gains 50% plus one of the vote on March 5th, they become mayor. If not, the top two candidates move on to the general election in November. This month, we've been dedicating Thursdays to sit down with the candidates. So far, we've spoken with former city council member Steve Hansen, epidemiologist Dr. Flojan Kofer. Next week will be former state senator Dr. Richard Pan. And today, we welcome Kevin McCarty, who is a former Sacramento City Council member and a current state assembly member representing the city at the state capitol. Assemblymember McCarty joins us now. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right. This campaign is kind of a full circle moment for you. You were formerly a city council member with Sacramento. You moved on to the state legislature. You represent our city. Was throwing your hat into the mayoral race, was that a natural decision for you?
No, I wasn't planning on doing this. It's full circle running for mayor as a Sacramentan. I grew up here in Sacramento. I love my hometown city. You know, I've served our community as a city housing commissioner, as a council member, and as a lawmaker. And I've always been about, you know, improving Sacramento, bringing about real solutions to our issues, focusing on how government can make a difference in people's lives, help my family growing up here, growing up in a single parent family. So I know that government can make a difference. I love being the state lawmaker, working on, you know, important issues like education, environmental issues, racial justice, a plethora of issues impacting Sacramento. But I wanted to step in and help solve problems at City Hall. And the mayor decided not to run for reelection. So I said, hey, I think I could do a good job and be effective.
If you're elected, it would be a similar trajectory to Mayor Steinberg, former city council member, state lawmaker. He was Senate pro tem, then becoming the city's mayor. Is there an advantage to bringing a statewide perspective to the city?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that the mayor has done a really good job at that I will do is bringing resources from the state, having connections with the governor, the legislature, the administrative branch to bring in, you know, transportation, park opportunities, helping our nonprofits, you know, public safety investments. So I really want to build upon that, you know, and I'm a different person than Mayor Steinberg. I think I have different skill set, but he's been able to deliver some of those resources for Sacramento and connecting the dots. And I think having understanding, you know, being a city commissioner, a council member, and a legislator helps me understand how government works. And at the end of the day, people want us in government to be effective.
If you are elected mayor, come December when you're sworn in, what is your priority day one?
Well, the top priority that wherever we go in Sacramento and frankly across the state is housing and homelessness. It's probably the reason that really pushed me to run. And really two things happened in the last year or so. First of all, this is an issue hanging around all of our collective necks, all of government. It's an albatross around city, county, federal, and state. And we are all in this together. You know, we're going to solve this issue by working together, not pointing fingers and suing each other. It's working together. You know, I had kids who were walking home from school last year and they had to, you know, go in the street under the bridge to go home every day. And I just said, you know, this is just too much. It's not good for the people sleeping out there, nor is it good for the, individuals who are trying to get home and families. And at the same time, I realized that it's not always about money. You know, I bring up this example quite often. In the budget 2 years ago, I was able to get a $25 million earmark for the county of Sacramento to do emergency housing to get people off of the American River Parkway. And that was more than double what they asked for. And now we're going on 2 years and we haven't spent a penny of that. And so what I'm realizing that it's not always about money. I've helped deliver tens of millions for city and county. I think we need more urgency to tell people where they can go. I supported the concept that we can't have urban camping in our parks, along our streets and along the parkway. But also conversely, we need to tell people where they can go, whether that's, you know, tiny homes at Cal Expo, the old city corp yards, Caltrans lands around the city. I want to be more urgent and bring about solutions on day one. And I'll agendize this issue every week as a council, as the mayor, to make sure the city council focuses on where people can go to address this critical issue.
On the topic of urban camping and redirecting people to safe places, I mean, I know you're well aware we have a fraction of bed space and shelter space available for the number of people who are unhoused and unsheltered on any given night. I think in the county, it's like upwards of 9,000 to 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. So how do you achieve that? I mean, that is an ambitious goal, but and I think one that a lot of other elected officials have. How will you actually make it a reality?
Well, it goes back to this $25 million question. I think too often government focuses on the perfect solution, not the good solution. The perfect too often is the enemy of the good. And yeah, it'd be great to have everybody to be indoors in an apartment and permanent supportive housing. But heck, I'd like places where people can go and legally camp and, you know, the old city courtyards, some Caltrans land where there's water and bathroom facilities and trash cans and services to help those individuals. So whether it's safe ground locations, whether it's places where people can legally park their cars or RVs, whether it's places we can put tiny homes, I think they all need to be on the menu. And some of these lower dollar solutions, you can focus on getting the masses off of the street today. Some of the, you know, people would say that's not enough, that's just a Band-Aid. Well, it's way better than we have now for those individuals and our communities. So I want to bring about more urgency to focus on low barrier solutions to get people off the streets today.
What would you say to voters who are dissatisfied or just flat out frustrated with how elected officials at both the local and state level have handled this issue, devoting, as you mentioned, and just unprecedented money, but not really feeling a difference in their neighborhoods?
Well, I'm frustrated. That's why I'm leaving the legislature to run for mayor. And, you know, when I left the city council 9 years ago, you know, homelessness wasn't an issue. We didn't talk about this issue. I think the homeless count in all of Sacramento County was just over 1,000. So it's, you know, more than quadrupled since then. And, you know, it's an issue that is very, very frustrating and tears on us. And, you know, I've tried my best as a lawmaker to write laws, to like set land over at CalExpo for emergency housing, to deliver money for the city and the county. And I got a special earmark for the county of $25 million, and it's still, we haven't been able to tackle all these issues. So I want to bring a more sense of urgency today. And this connects to your prior issue you spoke on today on Insight, which is these things are interrelated. It deals with addiction, mental health. And so some of the solutions I think for the city are honestly what I'm currently working right now as an assembly member, going to make it easier for me and mayors across California, some of the reforms we're doing now to put more resources to deal with some of the individuals who have these underlying challenges as well.
And this is an issue that transcends the city of Sacramento, and the city and the county, they need to work together. And there is something that they've agreed to on paper, you know, following Measure O, but there is tensions. There are lawsuits between the county and the city. I mean, you would inherit this if you become mayor. How would you overcome these hurdles to work in tandem with the county?
Well, I don't support the lawsuit, and I think we're going to solve this issue by working together. One thing that I note is that the legislature, we're now giving money to cities to tackle homelessness, and we're saying, we're only going to give you money if you work together, come up with a regional plan. That's why I'm working right now on legislation, bipartisan legislation with Assembly members Wynn and Hoover, Republican and Democrat here in Sacramento, S3, to have a regional joint powers authority to work on this. Our grand jury came out and said that one of the great flaws, we don't have enough connectedness focusing on our solutions. So we are all in this together. It's not just Rancho's problem or Elk Grove or City of Sacramento. We're all in the county together. So we need to work and engaging in these things together. I have good relationships with County Board of Supervisors members of the City Council. You know, I've been successful and effective bringing about practical solutions to our problems by working with others. And I'm, you know, a big believer that if you want to go, you know, fast, you jump out on your own. If you want to go far, you go with others, just like that African proverb. And so that's my model in governing, and I'm ready to roll up my sleeves and work with our local government partners to push this issue forward and come up with solutions for people, because my neighbors are frustrated.
Yeah. Well, being the face of the city is one thing. As mayor, ultimately in Sacramento, you're just one vote. And Mayor Steinberg has expressed frustrations with this in the past. You know, there's no executive order, for example. How would you collaborate and compromise with city council members for effective change to get the policies that you want across the finish line?
Well, you know, I've been a council member, so that's going to help me understand how it works. And I don't support the strong mayor measures. I've opposed them in the past. I think we need to work with all members of the council. Everybody should have an equal voice. I've been, like I just mentioned earlier, I believe if you want to go far, you go in tandem with others. So I have, you know, all my success in my legislative and city council, career on delivering, writing laws on, you know, protecting neighborhoods and going after slumlords and smart gun laws, and my laws at the legislature on education and mental health reform, I had to do by getting people to go with me. So I'm used to working under that system. I have, you know, allies on the city council right now, and I can work with anybody. So I'm ready to step in and be a team player and lead the city of Sacramento. The mayor is one vote. Their vote just as much as any other council member. They do have the reality that they're the face of the city of Sacramento, and the people of Sacramento expect that they kind of outline a vision. But, you know, we have to live within our governance structure, and I'm well aware of that and ready to be successful under that model.
On the issue of public safety, crime and retail thefts, I mean, they have become a growing concern. Recently, the Sacramento County Sheriff, the DA, the police chief, they've talked publicly about this. But residents also have expressed harm in the most vulnerable, under-resourced communities due to over-policing over the years and decades. So how would you work to create a safe neighborhood for everybody?
Well, I have a very unique vantage point here because I've been a leader in smart police reforms for a decade before they were popular. You know, before, you know, the death of Stephon Clark and George Floyd, you know, I introduced bills on, you know, independent investigations for police shootings and, you know, changing the use of force standards. You know, because I think that you can support the police department, which I do. I don't support defunding the police department, but I also demand accountability and public trust. So I've always leaned in on those issues. So I will continue to do so as mayor of Sacramento, whether there are public records on discipline proceedings and so forth, making sure the city of Sacramento follows the spirit of the law. And thankfully, in the last couple of years, we haven't had any high-profile, you know, police incidents. And so I think our work on de-escalation is probably proving to be successful. And I will continue to push on that front. But the issues of public safety, I hear it loud and clear. You know, my day job, I'm chairing the Public Safety Committee in the legislature right now, negotiating retail theft solutions on addressing Prop 47. So I'm doing that again. My day job is going to make it easier for me to be mayor next year because I'm leaning in, and we are currently writing some smart reforms to bring more accountability for individuals who are repeat offenders of retail theft. And, you know, I've always been about finding balanced solutions. So, you know, I don't want to go back to the 1990s and mass incarceration and sending somebody to prison for 25 years for stealing a piece of pizza, but repeat offenders at local convenience stores or Target and so forth are causing havoc in our communities, and we need to bring about more accountability, and I'm pushing that, and we'll do so as mayor as well to implement those laws.
You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with current State Assembly member Kevin McCarty, who is running for Sacramento mayor. As I mentioned, Daryl Steinberg, the mayor, is rounding out his second term. How do you think he did?
You know, I don't know who could have done a better job during these past 8 years than Mayor Steinberg. You know, we went through a global pandemic. We went through, you know, the summer of George Floyd, and the year before that, Stephon Clark. You know, the spike in homelessness has doubled, not just here in Sacramento, but across our state and frankly, the issue across the nation. So he's brought a lot of resources and solutions, and, you know, I applaud him for that. I want to take, you know, the mantle and or the baton and go on to the next level. You know, I support what he's done in so many issues, but, you know, I think it's an incomplete grade, and I want to focus on unfinished business. And, you know, the one thing that I really want to zero in on is, again, bringing more urgency to the issue of helping people get off the streets today. And I think that we have failed collectively in local government satisfying that. It could have been much worse. And I know we say that because of the beds that we've opened in the city of Sacramento. When I was in the city council, for example, we had no homeless beds, not one. Now, the mayor always alludes to, rightfully so, that he's helped and the council's helped deliver over 1,200. So, you know, that's not small potatoes. But we still have a lot of unfinished business. And I want to, you know, move our city forward. This is my hometown where my kids are, you know, freshmen in high school, where, you know, I care about the future and the safety of our city. And so we want to make sure that we continue to push Sacramento forward.
One of the biggest challenges you'll have to face if elected mayor is that the city is facing an estimated $50 million budget deficit for the upcoming fiscal year. I mean, you served on the city council from 2004 to 2014, so that was also during the Great Recession. How will you prioritize funding city services with a budget deficit like this?
Well, first thing is I'm really distraught that we do have this $50 million It distraughts me in the right word. It's a little disturbing that we have a $50 million deficit in an era where we don't have a sharp decline in revenues. So I was on the council in 9, 10, 11, 12 during the Great Recession when we had unemployment over 10%, massive drop in sales tax and property tax revenue. We're not seeing that in the city of Sacramento, and we're still seeing a $50 million shortfall with revenues and expenditures. And I think that's very problematic. You know, I was there when we had to, you know, shut parks and swimming pools and lay off public safety personnel with the police department and fire department, brown out fire stations. And it was terrible. And I don't want to have to go through that again. So, you know, I'm you know, ready to jump in there and roll up my sleeves and look for solutions to preserve core city services. If that means doing things differently, I'm okay with that. But, you know, I think that one of the larger questions we need to ask ourselves is how are we in this situation when we don't have a massive decline in revenue coming into the city of Sacramento? Hmm.
Another interesting question I'm asking because you're currently a state lawmaker and you've been working on converting some state office buildings to housing in recent years. You know, there is a push from some state agencies to get people back into the office, you know, post-pandemic, post-COVID time. I guess, do you support that? I mean, where do you stand on hybrid work, remote work, or just going back to work and getting to the next chapter?
Well, I think the nature of work is changing forever in our country, not just in California with state government. I don't think we could put the genie back in the bottle and have people all go back to work. It's going to be remote or hybrid work like that for a while. And then those are negotiations between state employees, their unions, and the state and the governor's office. And so, you know, that's part of out of the city's hands and frankly, out of the state legislature's hands. So that's happening. But the reality is we have far fewer people downtown, and that's very impactful for our city. And that's one of the things
that
I pride myself on is looking for real solutions to our problems. So during the pandemic, I saw this and I says, you know what? We should take these lemons and make lemonade. So I actually wrote a law. The governor signed it saying we should look at some of these state buildings and focus on adaptive reuse, turn them into housing. So the first one off the books is the EDD building at 800 Capitol Mall. We chose a developer and we're going to convert that building into 500 plus affordable housing units in the coming years. So that's just round one. I know the governor is excited about doing this in other locations. I'm currently working on doing this at the courthouse. When the county courthouse moves to the rail yards, that'll be vacant as well. So I think that's very promising for two things. One, bringing life to downtown, which is the heart of our central city. We saw during the pandemic that Midtown thrived and downtown was kind of dying. Why? People lived in Midtown. They don't live downtown. So repopulating downtown is a big part of my vision for the city of Sacramento. Plus, the other massive issue we talked about earlier with housing and homelessness, we need more housing at all income levels. So having hundreds of, if not thousands of new housing units down there in the core is going to be able to address, you know, the next generation of workers that need workforce housing.
Finally, I asked the candidates who've already been on the show about how their lived experiences and their identities would shape how they lead. Steve Hansen and Flo Cofer would mark firsts in their own right. Hansen would be the first openly gay mayor. Cofer would be the first Black woman elected mayor. And next week when we have Dr. Pan, he would become the first elected Asian American as mayor. How have your lived experiences and identities, how will it shape how you continue to lead and approach elected office?
Well, I don't know if I have a first like the others, and they're all great candidates, by the way, but I have a unique lived experience. I am a biracial African-American man, so the experience of, you know, racial justice and making sure government doesn't leave people behind, and people have been historically excluded in services throughout the city of Sacramento, certainly impacts me. Issues like, you know, racial justice on policing issues always is my lens of what I've learned about and lived from my family. You know, also, you know, I talk about my mom a lot. She passed away 15 years ago. She was my rock. And against all odds, she made it here in Sacramento. I went to community college, then Sac State, then law school, all with four kids while working full time. So I know that government can make a difference in people's lives. And so I always remember her experiences and, you know, after school programs and childcare programs that kept us out of trouble, that helped us, that mean so much to families. And that's one thing I'm going to do is help draw down money from the state to have universal after school programs, the law that I helped create, so we can help families like my family was benefited, you know, 30, 40 years ago here in Sacramento. So those all are important issues to the future. And certainly my life experience will help shape that and bring about real results for our community and my city of Sacramento.
Assemblymember McCarty, thank you for the time.
Thank you.
That is current Assemblymember and Sacramento mayoral candidate Kevin McCarty. We're going to round out our conversations with the leading mayoral candidates next week. Our final guest is former State Senator Dr. Richard Pan. And a note, as State Assemblymember, McCarty placed $2 million in the 2022 state budget to help pay for construction of Cap Radio's new downtown studios, funding which has since been put on hold following an audit by the Cal State System, which holds Cap Radio's license. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A partnership with NASA is giving a Sacramento Girl Scout troop an out-of-this-world experience, literally. The Girl Scouts just completed their call with an astronaut circling Earth aboard the International Space Station using a hand-built ham radio they made themselves. The program is called the Amateur Radio on the International Space Station. The goal is to encourage young people to explore the fields of science, technology, engineering, math, also known as STEM, as well as raise awareness about space and radio communication. And it's working.
NE1SS from November 6, November Alpha. I'll copy.
November 6, November Alpha. This is NE1SS, heavy 555. Help me.
Roger the 5x5. You're 5x5 as well. Please stand by for your contact with the Girl Scouts.
The Girl Scouts just spoke with the International Space Station about an hour ago, just down the road from our studios, and three of them join us now. Edie Blanke, Fred Dessinger, and Ainsley Fong, who are members of Troop 1089. Welcome. Congratulations. What an exciting time.
Thank you.
Okay, big, important question first. It's been about an hour. How do you guys feel? Ainsley, I'll start with you.
I still feel... feels like really amazing. The whole experience was kind of surreal, even though we've been preparing for it for a while. It was kind of when the astronaut first started talking, I was just still like really amazed.
I can completely understand why. You know, this is a lot of work that the three of you and your troop put together. Fred, how are you feeling about this?
I was honestly so amazed when she first started talking. Like, just like Ainsley said, I couldn't believe that she's in space. And we were talking to her from Earth with a radio that we built. It was just so amazing. I'm feeling really positive about it because everything went as well as it could have gone. Yeah, what? Nothing went wrong.
Well, it is very well-deserved excitement for all three of you. Edie, how are you feeling right now? I can see a smile very big on your face.
Oh my gosh, my heart was beating so fast. It was like, because we'd been preparing for it for so long, and then it was like the time was finally there, and it was so amazing.
How do you go about building a ham radio?
So
the Sacramento Radio Club, or they call themselves the Amateur Radio Communication Society.
Yeah, the
for Sacramento. They helped us, guide us on what parts to buy, because we actually had a GoFundMe to raise money for the parts. And they taught us a lot about radios. We built some with snap circuits. And then a lot of the hands-on radio work, they built it. And then we learned about what like each part did, its component in the radio, the purpose of it. It was really interesting. It was very educational.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially if you want to pursue like a field or just interested in STEM. I mean, that's wonderful. Ainsley, I mean, y'all talked with Lieutenant Colonel Jasmine Mogbelli, who was aboard the ISS as we speak. What was it like talking to an astronaut?
It was surprisingly clear when she first started talking because we had done like radio calls with people in California, and they actually weren't as clear as when we were actually talking to someone while they're in space, which is just really crazy to me. And then also the audio was great, and then just being able to talk to her and being able to ask her all our questions, and she had really great answers too. It was very interesting.
We're going to listen to some of the questions that y'all asked the astronaut. We're going to start off with Edie.
Hi, my name is Edie. What advice would you give to someone who wants to be where you are?
Edie, I would just say if you want to get into space exploration specifically, it's really challenging. And so the thing I would say is it's okay to fail. And it's inevitable that at some point you will fail if you're trying to do anything that's challenging and pushing the boundaries. And that's okay. Just keep trying. Over.
I would feel like that takes on a different meaning when it's coming from out of space.
Seriously.
You know, and just so people are aware, the astronaut Lieutenant Colonel Jasmine Mogbelli is a Marine Corps attack helicopter pilot, also a test pilot, launched to the space station as a commander of NASA's SpaceX Crew 7 mission back in 2023. Fred, what stood out to you about your experience in chatting with this astronaut?
I was struck by how much care she took to answer all of our questions specifically, and she even greeted us by name. And I was just really impressed with her because the whole mission of Girl Scouts is to get more girls involved in STEM. So the fact we were able to speak to like a female astronaut, she's the first Iranian American to ever go to space actually, was just really impressive and impactful.
All right, well, let's listen to one of the questions that you asked, Fred.
Hi, my name is Fred. Are your experiments mostly biological or technological?
Fred, you know, we have a lot of both. We have a lot of tech demos, a ton of biological experiments. I am not sure whether we have more of which one. More recently, it feels like we've been doing more biological experiments, but we have a lot of both, so I'm not sure. Over.
That's a very technical question. I mean, what kind of thought went into crafting up what you wanted to ask this astronaut?
Oh, so to come up with our questions, we all wrote down a few different questions that we had on pieces of paper, and then we put them all together, and we had a list of, I'm not sure how many questions, but it was a lot more than we could ask. So then in our next meeting, we went over the questions and tried to decide like which ones were our favorites, and we all put like our top 20 questions in a list, and then from that, we made a list of our top 20 to ask her.
Well, let's listen to your question, Ainsley.
Hi, my name is Ainsley. How do solar flares affect you and the space station?
We track our radiation up here. The folks on the ground, the team on the ground, track when there are solar events that are headed towards us. Luckily, since I've been up here, the solar events we have had haven't been anything that have really impacted our health significantly. Over.
I would imagine, I think it was 10 minutes you had with Jasmine. Those 10 minutes must have gone by in like a blink.
Yeah.
Fred, what are some of the moments that stand out to you the most? I mean, 10 minutes goes by fast, but I'm sure it's really impactful.
That's a good question. I think the moment that stood out to me the most was just that initial point of contact. Because at first, on the very first call, didn't go through. We definitely expected that. And then on the second, like, I'll put it as a ring, she picked up. And I was like, whoa, like, that's her. And then I think the second most impactful moment was just after everyone had answered their question or asked their questions, I asked the last question and then we closed it out. I kind of thought like, wow, like this really happened. And like, I can't believe that we really talked to her in space. I've repeated that a couple of times, but I just can't get unfixated on that. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty special that you all went through it together.
Yeah, definitely.
Edie, you know, you obviously all of you, with the help of the Radio Society here, built the radio. You started talking with this astronaut. What did you learn about what life is like, what the work is like on top of or in ISS?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we spent a lot of time learning about like how radio works, and like we learned Morse code and stuff like that. And we learned like the technical stuff about how it works, like the waves and all of that. And then we learned about like what Jasmine, like what her like history and stuff like that. And yeah, it was super interesting. We've been doing lessons since like November.
Did this inspire you to possibly explore more into STEM or radio in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think like the science parts were super cool, and then just learning about space is so interesting.
How about you, Ainsley?
So yeah, I'm interested in environmental studies, so it's more of a down-to-earth type of thing. But definitely I'm always curious about like how things work. So like learning about space and like black holes and like all of those different things, and like about just like just how astronauts work and like how their time is like really scheduled out like to the minute was like really interesting and cool.
Fred, how did this shape, you know, what you're passionate about, what you want to do in life?
Well, I'm really interested in astronomy already before this program. So now after doing the program, I'm just extra excited. I was literally jumping for joy when my mom told me about this. And I think it's just been an amazing opportunity for all of us. Like, I'll always cherish it as an amazing opportunity. Like, Edie got to design the T-shirts that we're actually wearing right now. And one was given to all the members who participated. And one is going to be given to the actual astronaut we spoke to. So it's just really cool to think about that. And I'm really excited to see, like, how this influences what I want to study in college.
I love it. I love that that astronaut is getting a T-shirt specially designed by all of you. Okay, last question, the hardest one. How did you juggle all of this during cookie sales?
Well, this year we're not selling cookies because it's our last year, and we decided that maybe we should focus on our astronaut, but
I guess
with school and stuff, still
school is important. Now you can eat cookies. You don't have to sell them like the rest of us that love cookie season. Thank you all three so much for joining us. What a treat!
Thank you so much.
That is Edie Blanke, Fred Dessinger, and Ainsley Fong, and they are Girl Scouts from Troop 1089 right here in Sacramento. Earlier this morning, they actually made contact with an astronaut aboard the International Space Station with a ham radio that they built themselves. And that is it for Insight today and this week. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to reach out to us, you can send us an email at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer and audio engineer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.